It's Sayin' AMMA!
Where'd you go? I miss you so. Feels like it's been forever since you've been gone.
We're back. What song is that?
Good question. I expected you to know. Probably like an Avril Lavigne song or something.
What? Why would I know?
It's like a rock and roll song. I don't know.
But we are back.
Somebody somewhere is mad that we don't know the name of that song, but whatever.
I'll look it up later. All right, it is Ain't MMA. We are indeed back. Coming at you before, 2 days before, UFC 272.
Hyped.
Very hyped.
Apologies about last week. Apparently, Slim forgets what I do every single Friday for the last year and a half, and he can't record past 9 o'clock, so he doesn't wake anybody up, so.
Yeah, you know. Respectful. What is that?
You like that one little string of hair? Hey, Slim's dressed like he's trying out for the PGA Tour this week.
Me and my son, you.
You got your golf cleats on?
Wait, they wear cleats?
I mean, they're not cleats, but they got like little like circular grippers on them.
Oh, for real?
Kind of like cleats.
I didn't know that. All right.
Golf shoes. All right. But yeah, sorry we missed that. We did, of course, put our picks on Twitter and all that good stuff, though. So if you guys follow us on there, you got the lowdown on who we were picking last week, which I never updated our shit, unfortunately, so I'll have to do that in between when we take our break.
Okay, we'll do that, but first let's get into a little news.
It's MMA news with Slim.
So here's the biggest and I think funniest news that happened like literally yesterday. So we'll talk about this in a minute, but Islam Makhachev beat Bobby Green. He's now on a 10-fight winning streak. Obviously, everyone's like, oh, well, you know, he's supposed to fight Beneil Dariush, who was number 5, but, you know, 10 wins is pretty good. Deserving of a title shot. We're not going to have another Tony Ferguson situation. So, he will sit out a little bit and wait for the winner of Oliveira versus Gaethje. Well, RDA lost his opponent in Rafael Fiziev due to COVID. So, Islam allegedly stepped up on his Twitter account and said, I will fight you at 170. I say allegedly because we know that, what's his name? Ali likes to run his fighters' Twitter accounts for them and talk shit. So, turns out Islam, when the UFC came to him, did not accept the fight. And Dana says now, since he didn't, he now has to fight Dariush. They're going to go back and remake that fight. How funny.
I think that's kind of messed up, honestly.
He shouldn't have stepped up and said, oh, I want the fight. And then when negotiations came, said, no, I can't do that.
Yeah, I guess. But stripping him of the title shot for that, yeesh.
Hey, cold world. Don't put your hand up if you can't answer the question.
Called the man bluff, I guess.
Love to see it. But RDA.
Background noise.
What?
Getting such bad background noise from you.
Really?
Yeah.
Nothing going on here?
Sounds a little bit better now.
But RDA is going to be fighting Renato Moicano this weekend. So, still a decent co-main event there. But yeah, haha to Ali and Islam Makhachev. Even though I do think he's deserving of that title shot.
Got their bluff called. That sucks.
Funny.
All right, let's talk about the news that shocked the MMA world. Of course, we're not going to go into details too much because it's just not something you want to talk about the details of. And you don't know what the details are. Go ahead and just look it up. But Cain Velasquez, former.
Hang on. You're cutting out. All right, so Cain.
Yeah, so Cain Velasquez has been charged with 10 different counts of, miscellaneous.
Is it 10?
Yeah, that's what he ended up with, but one of the main ones being attempted murder. If convicted of these charges, he could face 20 years to life. But, you know, it's a situation, like Dana said, it's something that every man says if he's ever, you know, faced with that situation, what they'd do, and, you know, Kane went out and did it. So it's unfortunate, and hopefully if...
Why do we keep losing you?
Very unfortunate situation for Kane Velasquez. Hopefully his lawyer is just A1. Hopefully Dana fucking gets him the best lawyer he can possibly get him.
OJ's lawyer?
Yeah, I mean, something like that.
It was alleged that the man who Kane attempted murdered on was molesting one of his family members for months and many, many times.
Well, I started this out. I started this whole thing out with. It's not something I really want to talk about. Go ahead and look it up, but that's what was happening.
Well, yeah. I mean, it gives a little, like, you know, gives a little oomph to the argument of, like, yeah, you know, Kane's arrested, but.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Free to me.
Yeah, get him OJ's lawyer ASAP.
What else?
You are cutting out real bad. I don't know what's up with you.
Yeah, your phone's fucking up, man.
Oh, man.
I'm getting, like, bad background noise, and I'm cutting out for you. I don't know what's going on.
Anyway, in more news, your girl is fighting coming up here.
What, Fioro got a fight announced?
Yeah.
Good, because she was supposed to fight this weekend against Jessica Eye, and it got canceled.
She is now fighting... in Columbus.
Ah!
Jennifer Maia.
Let's fucking go!
Are we going to that, by the way?
I mean, yeah, we need to get tickets ASAP.
They're like $100.
It's not going to, like, sell out or anything, but yeah, we need to get tickets.
Well, every time I've clicked on the website, it's, like, low inventory.
Yeah, they're just trying to get you to buy tickets.
Yeah, sure. But yeah, Jennifer Maia, Manon Faro. End of the month.
Let's fucking go.
Big step up for her.
Speaking of awesome fight announcements, this is per Dana White. He's back. What's his name?
I think you're talking about Chimaev?
I think you're correct. He'll be taking on Gilbert Burns at UFC 273. Oh, fuck yes.
Yes, dude. I am so excited for that.
Inject that in my veins.
I need it. What is the headliner for that event? Is that a pay-per-view?
Yeah, it's 273. Fucking goddamn
Jan versus Aldo?
No, it's Volkanovski versus Korean Zombie and Sterling versus Jan.
Dope. What you said, April 9th?
That is, yep, April 9th.
Cool. All right, good shit. This just announced an hour ago, Gerald Meerschaert is fighting Christoph Jatko.
All right. That'll be a fun little grappling bout.
Decent. Another announcement. Valentina Shevchenko will be defending her belt against Talia Santos at UFC 275 on June 11th.
I've been waiting for Talia Santos to get her title. Glad she did.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Let's see here. Sorry.
Of course, all the stuff I'm sure everybody who's listening knows. What's going on in Ukraine? Well, all the Ukrainian fighters pretty much stepped up to the plate. World champion, Hall of Fame, former boxers, the Klitschko brothers, Vladimir and Vitaly, both on the front lines. Yaroslav Amosov, the undefeated Bellator champ. One of the pound-for-pound best boxers in the world. Vasyl Lomachenko, also fighting. Good to see the combat community defending their homeland. I like to see that.
Yeah, I love that a lot. And it's really cool that, like, even the president, or was it the president? It was either him or the mayor, was like, yeah, I'm not leaving. I'm staying and fighting. Which,
you're talking about the president?
Yeah.
Like the mayor of what, Ukraine?
No, I thought it was one of the mayors, but the one of the mayors is the Klitschko.
Yeah, the capital is Klitschko.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But yeah, that I can only imagine what that would be like for us if we didn't elect a bunch of old people.
Right.
Anywho, Michael Johnson's back, and he's taking on Alan Patrick.
God, I hope he looks good in that fight.
Me too.
I was re-watching him versus Gaethje, and like that first round, like, oh my God, Michael Johnson was just battering fucking Gaethje, just hit all over the octagon.
Yeah, I keep seeing that fight pop up on TikTok. It's like people are just now figuring out. I think this is a rematch. No, correct me if I'm wrong. Mauricio Shogun, who is taking on OSP?
That is a rematch.
Nice. That is going to be May 7th, 274.
What's up with what do you feel about MMA's new favorite bromance, Darren Till and Chimaev?
I like it. Iron sharpens iron.
The shit's pretty funny.
I think so, too. Also, Chimaev's got fucking swag.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That shit's funny.
That boy be dressing.
Is that when Liverpool dripped out for no reason?
Yeah, with the North Face joint. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That was dope. This is dope. Charles Air Jourdain is fighting Lando Venata.
That's going to be a fun-ass fight.
Yeah, so is this one Ode Osborne and Zaruk Adashev?
All right. I can get behind that one.
Yeah. Brandon Royval against Matt Schnell.
I can't get excited for Matt Schnell. I
just can't. Yeah, if he comes in, even with his hair too long, you might say, oh, I'm not taking that fight. Mandy Berm is out of her fight with Sabina, with Miranda Maverick. In steps Sabina Monson.
You had to say Fazeev, but you remember to say Mandy Berm. Okay, good.
The umlauts caught my attention. Mandy Berm.
And you know what an umlaut is. All right, great. Cool. You know English now.
Good. German, actually, but, you know.
Okay.
Anyway. What else do I got here? Omar Morales is fighting Euros Medic.
Ooh, that's gas.
Yeah, I need to see him back. I want him to improve from his last performance.
For sure. Darren Till signed a new contract, too. Nice.
Good, good.
And they put out a documentary on Molly McCann on BT Sport.
Really?
Meeple.
Nick Maximov is taking on Andrei Petrosky.
There is not going to be one punch thrown in that fight.
I don't know about that. Maximov might switch it up.
I'm exaggerating, but it's going to be a fuck ton of grappling.
Yeah, for sure. Did you see Chance Redcounter and his injury?
No, what happened?
Chance Redcounter suffered 5 broken ribs and a punctured lung that was half full of blood and a bruised kidney stemming from that spinning back body kick from Andrea. Oh,
I didn't know it did all that.
Yeah. Yeah, he went straight to the hospital.
Almost killed that man. Speaking of brutal injuries, what about that dude in PFL? Listen, fighters, if you break anything that is above your jawbone, if it's your cheek, if it's anything around your eyes, even if it's your fucking nose, don't blow your nose. Not blow your nose. This dude pushed his eyeball out.
Yeah, that was foul.
So we had the head gash the other day, last time we recorded. Dude got his fucking scalp ripped off, and now we got eyeballs popping out.
Did we get an update? Can you look for an update on that guy? Because that was pretty foul. What if his eyeball, like, really fell out?
I mean, it was out. It wasn't, like, hanging out. It was in his eyelids, but...
Disgusting.
So Joe Rogan's back at UFC 272.
Yeah.
But, unfortunately, Daniel Cormier, with the passing of his mother, will be out. So Michael Bisping steps in. This is the first time ever we've had the combination of Joe Rogan, Michael Bisping, and John Anik.
Nice.
So that'll be fun.
Also, really?
I know, right? It's hard to, like, but it is always just, like, Fitzgerald, Bisping, and Felder when it's not the other guys, but, huh. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Darren Elkins is taking on Tristan Connolly.
What? Elkins versus Connolly?
Yeah. Wait, wasn't Connolly the one that bet his whole purse on himself and lost?
That was Justin James.
Ah, okay.
Tristan Connolly's the little guy that came up and fought Michelle Paella, and then he jumped over him and then got tired, and Connolly won.
That's right. That's right. Ooh, this one's so gassed. Jai Herbert and Ilya Topuria.
Who?
Jai Herbert and Ilya Topuria.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think Ilya's going to win that one pretty easily, though. He, all of his other matchups that have gotten canceled recently were harder than that.
Well, yes, but still, going to be a slugfest. And I think that's pretty much all I got.
All right, nice, nice. Good job, Slim. Solid outing there, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, so obviously we skipped a week last week, so just real quick, I want to go over this card that happened 2 weeks ago, just so we can give a little bit of a what's going on here. So in the first fight of the night, Mario Bautista defeated Jay Perrin via unanimous decision. John Chad Anneliger, great performance, got a knockout on Jesse Strader, beautiful counter left hand, followed it up with some ground pound. Gloria De Paula defeated Diana Belbitza via unanimous decision. Chas Skelly, awesome performance, landed a nice knee, followed it up with some hammer fists, defeating Stephanie Egger defeated Jessica Rose Clark due to an armbar. What are her might have been her breakout performance thing. Speaking of breakout performances, how about this guy, David Onama, with the knockout against Gabriel Benitez, 4 minutes, 24 seconds into the very first round. David Onama is something to watch out for. This one was a snoozer. Joaquin Buckley defeated Abdul Razak. It wasn't a snoozer, but I don't know. It wasn't what we expected. Buckley defeats Abdul Razak Al-Hassan via split decision. Jim Millard, you got this one, Slim. I was surprised. Jim Miller defeated Nicholas Mota via TKO due to a right hook and followed it up with some ground strikes. That was 1 minute 58 seconds into the second round. Our guy, Parker Porter, defeated Alain Baudot via unanimous decision. Co-main event, I still can't believe you picked Jamie Pickett in this, Slim. Kyle Daukus defeated Jamie Pickett via submission due to a darts choke. That was 4 minutes 59 seconds into the very first round. He just had to wait one more second.
I know.
Terrible. And then Jamal Hill defeated Johnny Walker via stunning knockout.
A cartoon character knockout.
2 minutes, 55 seconds of the very first round. That shit. He really did fall just like a cartoon character.
He went, whoa!
Performance of the nights. Jamal Hill, $50,000 for his knockout. Kyle Daukus, $50,000 for his submission. David Onama, $50,000 for his TKO. And Stephanie Egger with $50,000 for her submission. What do you think's next for Jamal Hill, Slim?
Well, Ozdemir was calling him out already.
So. I'd like to see that.
Let me see where they are on the rankings.
I think that'd be a good matchup, honestly.
Ozdemir's number 9, Jamal Hill's number 10. Or Ozdemir's number 8, so yeah, why not?
I mean, it makes sense for both guys, really, and you know, because like Ozdemir, it's like he's still trying to get back on track, and Jamal Hill, it's like it feels like he's an oncoming force again, so I think it makes sense.
I would like to see Jamal against Ankalaev.
Oh, I feel like that's just such a bad matchup for Jamal.
If he can get over that guy, title shot,
yeah, for sure, but. Yeah, that's a tough one right there. That's a tough one for sure.
Also, do you have the rankings pulled up?
Not right now, no. Why?
There's like a little symbol. Battle Motors next to Glover Teixeira's name?
I don't know.
Really weird. Yeah, anyway. That was that fight night. Pretty good one overall, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. All right, and then, of course, there was Bellator 274. I'm not even going to go through that, but Logan Storley defeated Neiman Gracie. And then, Give me one second here. So, Bellator 275 also happened, with Gegard Mousasi easily defending his belt against Austin Vanderford. So, I pose you the question. Was that just an off night for Austin Vanderford? Is Gegard Mousasi really that good? Or is that division in Bellator really just that trash?
First of all, what's Vanderford doing at middleweight?
I thought he always fought at middleweight.
No, he started at 170, and everyone thought, oh, he's going to go beat Lima. And then he went up to middleweight randomly, and yeah, he was still winning, but like, he's undersized. Mousasi looked a lot bigger. Also, I didn't rewatch the fight, but someone said that, I forget, I think it was either after one of the punches or after the first takedown attempt, you could see his knee buckle, so there might have been an existing injury from him.
Yeah.
But I do think Mousasi is super underrated. I just think there's probably 10 guys in the UFC that would beat him. You know what I mean?
I mean, he was in the top of the UFC when he left.
Yeah, he was like top five, I think.
Close to a title fight.
Yeah, but that was also like 5 years ago. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe he's one of those guys that gets better with age.
Well, he hasn't really lost since he's... I don't think he has lost since he's been in Bellator.
No.
Or if he did, it was once.
I think you're right. I think he's undefeated in Bellator. Yeah, I don't know. I think that was a really weird showing for Vanderfort.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Mousasi was going to win, but I didn't think he was just going to go out there and fucking steamroll him like that.
No, super weird.
But get too deep into that card either. I just wanted your reaction off that.
I was shocked.
Yeah, me too. Which means we are finally caught back up, you guys. Last week end was... Of course, a fight that I feel like the MMA community was actually pretty excited for, despite, like, you know, it's not too often that you get a short notice step up and people kind of get more excited for the fight from it. But, yeah, I mean, I felt like the MMA community really rallied behind Bobby Green last week. I feel like everybody was rooting for him.
Yeah, for sure. And then now after the fact, everyone's hating on Islam, but we'll get into that. Let's start off from the bottom. We had Victor out. Oh, wait.
Yeah, you're right.
Alta Murano, yes, taking on Carlos Hernandez. Two UFC newcomers coming off of the Contender Series.
So you and I both went with Alta Murano in this one. The former LFA champion. I just thought he was going to do enough on the feet and defend enough takedowns with his... Because, you know, Hernandez really had to crash in to get those takedowns. But he was eventually able to get them. It was a very close fight, man. I actually had it scored for Alta Murano, but I can totally see it for Hernandez as well. Razor-thin fight. But, yeah, I think this was a good test for both these guys. And I'm pretty sure both of them, their last two fights have been by split decisions, so...
Yeah.
ANA MMA starts the night out 0-1 with Carlos Hernandez defeating Victor Alta Murano via split decision. The judges had those scorecards 30-27, 29-28 in favor of Carlos Hernandez, and then 29-28 in favor of Alta Murano.
Wasn't it Hernandez?
Oh, let's go! Sorry, guys. I got money on the line right now. You know, I'll be tripping. Come on.
This dude's just Adam Sandler uncut gems all the time. Have you ever watched that movie?
No, I haven't.
Dude, it makes me so uncomfortable.
Why?
Just so much bad luck all the time.
It's like watching...
My Life.
Shameless?
No, My Life. Wasn't Carlos Hernandez the one that him and his opponent both got a contract?
Correct. Nice, yep. Nice. When he took on, or was it Alta Murano? I think it was Hernandez. But yeah, one of them took on Carlos Candelario.
Nice.
All right. Let's go ahead and get into this next fight. Slim, what was I saying all week? I know we didn't get to record, but what was I saying all week?
Ramiz Brahimaj submission.
I mean, I've never seen something make more sense in my life.
First of all, Brahimaj
ADCC champion, you know, at the purple belt level, about as good as it gets. And then Michael Gilmore, all of his losses except one, which was also on the ground, by submission.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is simple math here, people.
I disagreed with Bisping so hard when he was talking. He was like, yeah, I interviewed him in the fighter meeting, and I was like, do you have anything else? Like, you know, you're a one-trick pony. And I'm like, bro, shut the fuck up, Bisping. Are you serious? This dude is just swooping in and submitting people. There were five strikes thrown in this entire fight. Like, I don't care what else he knows how to do. If he can go get that done that fast, that efficient, that's all you need to do.
Easily got the takedown, and then as soon as he took his back, I mean, you knew it was over.
It was done. Like, that was a masterclass performance by Brahimaj, and he is one to watch out for at middleweight right now.
He really needs to work on that striking, though, man. You said middleweight, he's welterweight.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Michael Gilmore dropped down. That's right.
But, I mean, we've kind of just gotten such a mixed bag from Ramiz Brahimi. It's kind of hard to get that good grasp on him, because what we've seen is the dominant grappling side, two first-round submissions. And then on the other side, I mean, you know, getting your ear blown off by fucking Max Griffin's never a great look. And then,
no.
You know, Court McGee, I know he's a tough veteran, but I mean, that was a fight, you know, we thought that Brahimi should have won. You picked McGee, I believe, but
yeah,
but Brahimi, I mean, you know, it's tough, man. We need to see him work on some things with his striking. Once he gets that in order, I do think he'll be something to watch out for, but until then, I'm still a little bit standoffish about it.
All right, fair enough.
Anyways, Ramiz Brahimi defeats Michael Gilmore via submission due to a rear naked choke. That was 2 minutes and 2 seconds into the very first round. Ramiz Brahimi, now 10-4 overall, 2-2 in the UFC, all 10 of his career victories by way of submission. And Michael Gilmore, now 5-5 overall, 0-2 in the UFC. He has suffered all five of his career losses. Oh, he's 6-5, sorry. All five of his career losses by stoppage. And four of his five career losses by submission, as I said earlier. So, let's go ahead and move on to this next one. This was a pretty good scrap overall. I enjoyed this one.
Yeah, it was Alejandro Perez taking on Jonathan Martinez. Really weird showing from Perez. For the most part, he's just kind of like going with the flow, letting Martinez lead for most of the round, and then at the very end, he just kicked it on at like the last 10 seconds of the first and the second round. And then the third one, he just came out like a firecracker, but it wasn't enough, man. Martinez stayed patient. He looked really good getting out of the way of danger of Perez. And I mean, he didn't pose much of a threat to what Martinez wanted to do. Martinez pretty much controlled this fight.
Yeah. We know what Jonathan Martinez's strengths are, which is his kicks. And then the way he mixes in his Muay Thai with his knees and his elbows, maintaining distance. He did a lot of good work with that, but I mean, he was not throwing. Do you have how many punches he threw by any chance? Because it was not a lot.
Who?
Martinez. He probably threw three or four as many times kicks as he did punches.
It was 34 to the head, 8 to the body. Or no, I lied. 36 to the head, 23 to the body, and 15 to the legs.
Okay, but you can't see what were kicks and punches.
No.
They were mostly kicks, trust me. And I mean, he has an unbelievably beautiful head kick, but man, he really needs to put some punches behind that so he can set that head kick up instead of just throwing it, you know, a bunch of them at once.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was a good performance there by Jonathan Martinez. He defeats Alejandro Perez via unanimous decision. The judges had it 30-27, 29-28, 29-28. Jonathan Martinez, now 15-4 overall, 6-3 in the UFC. He has four of his six UFC victories by way of decision. And then on the other side, Alejandro Perez, now 22-9-1 overall, sorry. And his record in the UFC is—I don't have it right now. All right, on to the next one.
Why
in the lightweight division?
Why was this so down on the prelims?
What?
Why was this so far down on the prelims?
I have no clue, dude.
You had a guy who had a 7-second knockout, and you put him on the early prelims
against Zion, who's been a killer the whole time. Like, come on.
Yeah. So Terrence McKinney, we know what he did last time out. As I said, 7-second knockout over Matt Frivola. But he's been talking about his wrestling and his grappling, and that's exactly what he showed here.
And that's what I was not sure of, why they had him at plus 700 for submission.
Really?
Yeah. Remember that parlay I sent you? So I picked Alto Morano, but I figured if Carlos Hernandez did win, it was going to be by decision. So I had Carlos Hernandez decision. I had Terrence McKinney submission. And then I'll let you guys know what the last leg of it was later, because it's brutal. One of my all-time bad beats.
Yeah, but McKinney, man, I went for a weird takedown, grabbed a leg, and ended up getting it done with, I believe it was a rear naked, right?
Yeah, it was a weird one, though. He was kind of like off to the side, and it looked like he didn't have the grip, but he got it, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, Terrence McKinney, people forget, like, this dude had an Olympic, like, he tried out for the Olympics in wrestling. He was no slouch in wrestling. He has a lot of wins by submission. He just has that knockout power that he loves, like, starting the fight out with, because usually a lot of people can't get past it. But when him and Zion got close, he obviously went to his grappling chops, and it worked perfectly for him.
Yeah, this fight only lasted 2 minutes and 11 seconds, and it was his longest fight in his last 5 fights.
Combined. That's crazy.
Nuts.
Terrence McKinney defeats Forrest Zion via submission due to a rear naked choke. That was 2 minutes and 11 seconds into the very first round. Terrence McKinney improves his overall record now to 12-3 overall. He's 2-0 in the UFC and stays perfect with a 100% stoppage
rate.
Ratio?
Stoppage rate.
Yeah, 100% stoppage rate. There you go, Slim. And then on the other side, God, my fucking shit's taking so long. Forrest Zion is now 12-4 overall, and his UFC record falls to 2-2.
Nice. All right, moving on to the women's featherweight division. I actually didn't know this fight was a featherweight when I picked it. Or I might not have picked Nunes, I'm not going to lie.
Well, I mean, it's just, when you see her height, you're like, why isn't she fighting at strawweight?
I'm pretty sure she was short notice for this.
But, yeah, I mean.
But anyway, yeah, Jocelyn Nunes taking on Ramona Pascual. Severe height difference in this fight. But I think Nunes actually had the reach advantage.
Though, Josiane Nunes fought Bea Malecki and knocked her out. So, I mean, it's not like she hasn't overcame a height advantage. Like, she had a worse one before and got the knockout in the UFC. So.
True. That's why I was a little surprised. Wait, didn't you pick Pascal?
Fuck no.
Oh, okay. Oh. Whoops, I lost Monty.
Her, like, if you combine the records of her opponents that she's beat, they're like 1-12 or something like that. Like,
damn. No,
I didn't pick her.
Okay. Anyway, yeah. Josie Nunes controlled this whole fight for the most part. She looked great on the feet. She was really throwing some combinations together. Pascual did get 3 takedowns out of 10, though. But she really just couldn't do much with him. She was pretty much just holding down Nunes and waiting for the round to end, especially in the first round there. And yeah, and this is Nunes's fight.
Yeah, Nunes continues to impress. She beats Ramona Pascual via unanimous decision. The judges had the scorecards all in favor for Josiane Nunes, 30-27, 30-27. One judge had it 30-26.
She reminds me of fucking Autoria.
Oh, I'm glad nobody else knows who that is. Yeah. Josiane Nunes now 9-1 overall. Her UFC record is now 2-0. Ramona Pascual falls to 6-3 overall. She is 0-1 in the UFC.
Nice.
All right, a battle between two very, very highly touted prospects at 155. And, I mean, this dude is something else, man.
Yeah, if you picked against Ignacio Bahamondes, then you're wrong.
Boo!
Aw.
Oh, brother.
Zoo did miss weight. He went in, I believe, 160, maybe? I think he missed it by 4 or 5 pounds. But yeah, man, Bahamonde is one of the taller fighters in the division. That's 6'3", just using that range excellently. Those teep kicks are great. The range...
fucking stupid, dude.
Yeah, and his ground game, I mean...
Finish it off with a Bravo choke, like...
I thought they called it a Darce choke.
It was a Bravo.
Okay. What, wasn't there someone...
You want to get technical with me?
Yeah. Wasn't there someone that was like, you know what, Tony Ferguson... I'm calling you out. I'm coming for the name or something like that. What was that last week?
I don't know. I don't remember that.
He was like calling him out. He says he's the Darce Knight or whatever.
The Darce Knight. Well,
might have been last week.
Two different chokes, but yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Bahamondes looked absolutely great. It was only a matter of time before he got the finish on this, and in the third round, he got it done.
Yeah, I mean, I had Bahamondes on, like, my favorite parlay of the day, and I was just so sure that he was going to win this one, and just an outstanding performance, man. This kid continues to shine, and, you know, I don't think it'll be long until we see him in the top 15.
I agree.
Ignacio Bahamondes defeats Zhu Rong via submission due to a Bravo choke. That was 1 minute 40 seconds into the third round. Ignacio Bahamondes improves his overall record now to 13-4. He is 2-1 in the UFC. That was the first submission victory of his career. Rong Zhu now 19-5 overall, 1-2 in the UFC. He suffered 4 of his 5 career losses by stoppage, and he has suffered all 4 of his career stoppage losses by submission.
Nice. All right, moving on to the main card. We had Armand Petrosian taking on Gregory Rodriguez. Disagreement by us. And honestly, I kind of saw it the other way. Looking at the strike numbers, man. Petrosian that way outlanded Rodriguez 128-61, but it did not seem like that watching the fight. Rodriguez definitely had more pop in his punches and was doing the damage. What are you shaking your head?
I'm just getting re-frustrated.
Yeah, it looked like Rodriguez was definitely doing the more damage. He got a couple takedowns even in this. It looked like he was kind of controlling this fight. Petrosian was on the back foot the whole time. He was wobbled half the round most of the time. And yeah, man, the judges might have got this one wrong.
So,
but especially for a 30-27.
As I was talking earlier, I put in a $5 bet to win $600. I needed Carlos Hernandez by decision. I needed Terrence McKinney by submission. And then the last thing I needed was Gregory Rodriguez by submission.
He came close.
It made so much fucking sense. All he had, oh my God, all he had to do was go in there with a fucking somewhat competent game plan. Somewhat competent. You are fighting a K1 kickboxer. I get it. You have knockouts. You're cool, bro. As Bisping was even saying this, like, people fall in love with the knockout. Like, he just can't get over it. All he needed to do, which he did in the third round, is get a takedown, which he did so fucking easily, and he could have been doing the entire time, get him to the ground and go for a rear naked choke. So he gets him in a Suluev stretch, almost has him. Petrosian gets out of it. All right, whatever. Gregory Rodriguez gets his back, has a rear naked choke locked in to win me $600 with a body triangle, and loses it.
Honestly, when he had him in the
and then doesn't go for another takedown. He deserved this loss. I don't care if you think he won. I don't care if I think he won. He deserved the loss.
When he had him, idiot. When he had him in the banana split, I was like, oh, it's over. I don't know how he got out of that,
bro. You're a national champion, world champion, Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter. And just because you knock a couple fools out, you're not going to take down a K1 kickboxer? You're an idiot. Go ahead and lose, dumbass. Fuck Gregory Rodriguez. I'm never picking him again.
Although
he's on my shit list. Like,
Although, like I said, I do think he won. He did not. It was a split decision.
He deserved to lose. I'm glad he lost.
It was a split decision for Petrosian.
Yeah, so Armin Petrosian defeats Gregory Rodriguez via split decision, 30-27, which I don't know how that happened, 29-28, all in favor of Armin Petrosian.
I had it
2-0 Petrosian. Somebody was like, somebody on Twitter was like, what fight are you watching? I said, same one as you, numbnuts.
Well, it wasn't all in favor.
Did I say all in favor?
Yeah.
One judge had it for Gregory Rodriguez, 29-28.
Anyway.
Armin Petrosian, now 7-1 overall, 1-0 in the UFC. That was actually the very first decision victory of his entire career. Gregory Rodriguez, rightfully so, falls to 11-4 overall. My computer is going very slow, but I will get you his UFC record here momentarily. He is 2-1 in the UFC.
Nice. Okay, moving on to the lightweight division. One of the fights I was most hyped about on this card. It was Armand. Yeah, it was Armand Saryukian taking on Joel Alvarez. The reason I picked Alvarez in this is because not only is he the taller, lankier fighter, I thought he had a better submission ground game, especially off his back. And he has pretty much finished almost all of his UFC opponents, whereas Saryukian is just decisioning them out. But they were both, I believe, 5-1 coming into this in the UFC. If I'm wrong, Saryukian was 6-1. So it was great that they matched these guys up. This was fantastic matchmaking, but it ended up being Saryukian, man. He came out hot on the feet, looking a little crazy, but ended up...
They were both 4-1. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you, but...
Okay. So you can end up getting the takedown and slice Joel Alvarez open with a elbow from the top. I think he was in full guard even. It was crazy. Joel just bleeding everywhere. That was a nasty one. And so you can end up using it to just keep Alvarez from being able to do any offense off his back. And then the second round got the TKO, man.
I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, when has ANA MMA ever picked a fighter, except last week, obviously, because we think they can do work off their back? Is that really ever a good thing?
Okay, no. But he's gotten some subs from it.
I mean, I see it. I had a parlay that had Joel Alvarez by submission, but I mean, that's just such a hard path of victory.
That wasn't the only method of victory. If he could have kept it standing, it would have been a different story. But
no, I don't think so.
I think he's nice on the feet.
Not like that.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyways, Armand Saryukian defeats Joel Alvarez via TKO due to ground and pound. That was 1:56, or I'm sorry, 57 seconds into the second round. Armand Saryukian improves his overall record now to 18-2. He is 5-1 in the UFC. He's on a 5-fight UFC winning streak in the lightweight division. That is tied for the 4th longest active streak, only behind Charles Oliveira, the man that beat him in the UFC, Islam Makhachev, and Benil Dariush is 7.
Nice.
Joel Alvarez, now 19-3 overall, 4-2 in the UFC. He has suffered 2 of his 3 career losses by stoppage, both of those being by knockout.
Wonderful.
All right, let's move on to this next one. Another disagreement by ANA MMA.
Yeah,
and this bullshit. You thought Gregory Rodriguez won that fight. I thought Jeon Kim fight.
Yeah. The judges are feeling bad for me. So let me get ahead of you on this one. It was Jeon Kim taking on Priscilla Cachoeira. I picked Priscilla. Jeon Kim outlanded Priscilla Cachoeira 170-102 in significant strikes.
It's like, okay, you know, maybe if she won by split decision, whatever. But she won by unanimous.
Nah, fam.
Like, what?
First round wasn't too exciting, but then the second and third, man, they were just going at it. It was a bloodbath. Did this get fight of the night?
I believe so. Let me double check that.
But it ended up being fantastic. Gian Kim had Priscilla in all kinds of trouble.
It was.
Priscilla was in a spot at one point to like really possibly knock Kim out, but she just kept throwing one strike, the right elbow, just four of them in a row, setting it up, boom, setting it up, boom. And it was like, throw a combo in there, you might get her. But I don't know what that was about, but I don't think Priscilla won this one either, so.
Lucky night for Slammy.
Hey.
He'll take it. Priscilla Cachaera defeats Gian Kim via unanimous decision, somehow 29-28 all across the board. Gian Kim now she falls to 9-5-2 overall. She's 3-5 in the UFC. She's 3-4 since she went down to the flyweight division, and she suffered all five of her career losses now by way of decision. Poor Gian. And then on the other side, Priscilla Cachaera improves her overall record now to 11-4, and her UFC record, God, my computer is just going so slow, is now 3-4, sorry, geez.
Oof. Nice.
It's hard to remember. She started out so rough with Valentina Shevchenko. Like, her first fight in the UFC was Valentina Shevchenko, okay? And then Molly McCann, Luana Carolina, and then she got wins over Shannon Dobson, Gina Mazzani, and Gian Kim now. But, yeah, it's been kind of with a loss to Jillian Robertson there in between. But, yeah, it's kind of been a weird go of things for Zombie Girl.
Very much. All right, moving on to this co-main event. We had Misha Sergeyev giving it another crack at middleweight, taking on Beef Wellington Turman. And, man, this is not how I thought it would. Misha looked like the much bigger guy here. Wellington ended up blocking in a choke in the first round, and Misha was able to fight out of it. Ended up switching the position. He had a north-south choke at one point. I really thought he was locking it in, and Wellington got out of that, then backpacked him for like the whole, it was either the first round or second round, but ended up getting the rear naked again in the second round. It was crazy.
Yeah,
like I didn't think Sherman was nice like that.
It was a fun. See, I thought all the grappling advantages were going to be in favor of Misha Sergeyev.
But same.
I was proven wrong.
Yeah, Sergeyev's got to change something, man. Change camps or something. He might be cut.
Yeah, it could very well happen. Anyways, Wellington Turman defeats Misha Sergeyev via submission due to an armbar. That was 1 minute, 29 seconds into the second round. Beef Wellington Turman improves his overall record now to 18-5. His UFC record is, I don't have it. Misha Sergeyev, 15-8 overall, 6-6 in the UFC. His 3-fight losing streak is the longest of his career now. He's 0-2 since he dropped to that middleweight division, 2-6 in his last 8 appearances, 7 of his 8 career losses by way of stoppage. So yeah, I'm not going too well for Misha lately.
Oh, well.
On to the main event of the evening, and I'm not going to lie, I thought it was going to go over 2.5 rounds.
Yeah, I don't know about that one, bud. It was Islam Makhachev taking on Bobby Green. We've never seen Bobby Green get dominated like this. Islam got the takedown, swallowed him alive. It only lasted 3.5 minutes. Just absolute domination. Like I said, no one's ever done that to Bobby Green in the UFC.
I mean, we've seen Bobby beaten pretty good before, but yeah, Islam Makhachev just went out there and made it look like it was nothing.
Yeah, and you know what Bobby said after the fight? They were like, yo, so like, do you think you want to get another main event spot? And like, you know, with a full camp and all that? And he goes, honestly, no. He was like, let me fight early. Let me get that out of the way. All this sitting around waiting. I was like, all right, Bobby, no main event.
I feel it. So Islam Makhachev defeats Bobby Green via TKO due to ground and pound. Makhachev's now 22-1 overall. Bobby Green falls to 29-13. Islam Makhachev improves his overall record now. He's 22-1. Bobby Green's now 29-13. Makhachev, on a 10-fight UFC winning streak, that's tied with Charles Oliveira and Alexander Volkanovski for the second longest active streak in the UFC, only behind Kamaru Usman's 15. Makhachev has landed at least one takedown in 9 of his 12 UFC appearances, and Bobby Green now has suffered both of his UFC stoppage losses by way of knockout.
Bro, can we stop the Islam hate? Like, the shit I was seeing on Twitter after the fight was just pissing me off. Everyone just talking about, well, who's he beat? A bunch of nobodies. Well, how's he going to fight for the belt next when he's fought a bunch of nobodies? And it was just like, dude, he's on a 10-fight win streak. You know who else is on, you know who else is on a 10-fight win streak? The fucking champ. Like, let's not get into another Tony Ferguson situation where this dude just goes on a run and never gets his shot. Like,
well, I it's there now that we know he's fighting Beneil. I feel like this is totally a Tony Ferguson situation.
I think he beats Beneil, and I think he gets a title shot. Like, I mean, but the people saying he doesn't deserve it right now, dog, absolutely does.
Yeah, that's pretty outrageous.
I don't know. I think it's crazy.
Anyway, Slim beat me by one on this card, so I'm going to get our records, like I said, here at halftime. I'll get you guys a little update on what's going on with me and Slim. But, yeah, overall, it was a good card. Some last-minute stuff put together there, but overall, it prevailed, and it was a fun one. But now we get UFC 272. Nope. No title shot on the line, but a whole lot of bragging rights, a whole lot of bad blood's about to be settled. There's a lot to look forward at UFC 272. So I'm excited. We're going to take a quick break here, but when Slim and I come back, we are breaking down the card that everybody is excited for. It's got the whole MMA community buzzing. The battle between two former friends, Colby Covington and Jorge Masvidal. It's going to be a great one, man. So keep it locked here. Give us a couple minutes, and we will be right back.
Yes, sir. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. We're back in this bitch.
Hey. We're rubbing it.
Whacking it.
Whacking it.
All right. UFC 272.
Oh, hold on. I forgot to give our updated records. So going into this one, with Slim beating me by one last week, I'm up three I'm up three in the prelims. I'm up one on the main card. We're tied in main events. And overall, I'm up four.
Nice.
So we'll see what little Slim can do or whatever. I ain't worried about him.
You better be worried.
Everybody's all like, ooh, we love Slim. Who gives a fuck?
They do?
Yeah, you're like the fan favorite or whatever. I don't care.
No, word!
I don't worry about it.
What are you?
Second.
You're just the tech guy.
Yeah.
All right. Let's run it down. So, pretty good fight card overall. As you said earlier, no title on the line. I love it, except for the one fight on the main card with Greg Hardy.
Your boy?
Doesn't deserve to be there.
Now Greg Hardy doesn't deserve to be there.
Oh no, I'm still gonna pick him.
Oh, now Slim's not excited for Greg Hardy fights. Okay.
Oh no, I'm still gonna pick him. I'm just saying, I don't think it should be on the main card. Yeah, drink your cab and I salute you. All right, very first fight of the night. We have Dustin Jacoby taking on Michael Oleksychuk. Start with Dustin. He's 16-5-1, 33 years old, 6'3", with a 73-inch reach. This man has not lost in MMA since 2015.
All right. He took a little bit of a break. Don't do that.
Just saying.
He took like a 3-year break.
No, he didn't. He was fighting kickboxing the whole time.
Okay, that's not MMA.
Right, but still the last time he lost. However, he is on a, if you include the Contender Series fight, he's on a 5-fight winning streak with one draw. So that is really impressive. Only 2 finishes in that time to Justin Ledet and Darren Stewart, but still, he's taking on like Ion Kutalaba, Maxim Grisham, and John Allen in his last fight out, so... Really impressive for Dustin Jacoby there. Michael Oleksychuk, though, 16-4. He is Only 27 years old still. Only 6 foot tall as well, with a 74-inch reach. So he will have a 4-inch reach disadvantage in this. That's a big one when you're going up a kick with a kickboxer like Jacoby. Oletschuk is on a 2-fight winning streak. Shamil Gajmatov and Modestus Bukauskas. And then Shamil won. He got a first-round knockout. So we've really seen him turn it around since losing to OSP and Jimmy Crute there. Yeah, man, this is going to be a really good one. I cannot believe this is the first fight of the night.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this one because it's really just a striker's paradise, man. This is going to be a really good one. It's interesting, too, because it's two different striking styles. Now, Dustin Jacoby uses his length really well, likes to stay on the outside, but when he does close, he can throw knees very well. He can use his elbows very well. Very good Muay Thai kickboxing. But when he starts getting put on his back foot, that's when you see him start to struggle. And that's what's going to be the key here for Michael Oletschuk if he's going to win this fight. Because if he's not pressuring forward, that's just going to leave all those opportunities for Dustin Jacoby to capitalize on. So I think it's going to be a huge thing for Oletschuk to have a good game plan and not let Jacoby dictate the pace in this fight. Because if he does, he's going to get picked apart. If he gets Jacoby on his back foot, that's when he's doing his best work. And Oletschuk does a good job of mixing up his strikes. He goes to the body very well, goes to the head very well. So that might throw a couple different looks the way of Dustin Jacoby and get him maybe moving backwards. But overall, when I look at the striking skill sets, I got to go with the guy that I'm the K1 kick or the Glory kickboxing experience. Dustin Jacoby, just an outstanding striker, and I think this one's going to mostly be on the feet. I think it gives him the advantage. I'm going with Dustin Jacoby here.
I got to go the opposite way for everything you just said. I think the pressure of Oletschuk is going to weigh on Jacoby. I think the only time Oletschuk has ever lost has been on the ground, and I don't think it's going there. So I'm taking Michael.
All right. ANA MMA disagreement on the very first fight of the night. I'm going with the minus 200 Dustin Jacoby. Slim going with the plus 170 Michael Oletschuk. The team that I needed to win is up now, Slim. Let's go.
Nice. Okay. Moving on.
All right. We got a little Ohio flavor in this motherfucker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We got Ludovic Klein taking on Devontae Smith. We'll start with King.
Yeah, and you know what? I think this is – Ludovic is coming in on short notice because Eric Gonzalez, was originally supposed to be Devontae's opponent. And Ludovic coming up one weight class here from featherweight to lightweight. I don't know how much of an effect that will have on him. I don't know how much bigger Devontae will be. But these are two guys that have, kind of been – that came into the UFC with so much hype, and it's kind of fizzled out since then. Both of them on losing streaks, so we'll see if they can, someone's got to come back and get on top. So, Devontae's not on a losing streak, but he's 2-3 in his last three. So,
yeah, with those losses coming from Jimmy Mularkey and Kama Worthy, both knockouts. He did get that Justin Jaynes stoppage in the second round. He was on his way to finishing that one, I think, as well. And also the Dong Young Ma finish and the Julian Arosa finish as well. Ludovic Klein, however, he is coming off those pair of losses to Mike Trezano and Nate Landwehr, where he got Anaconda choked. He did have a knockout over Shane Young in his first UFC fight, though. So I think this one probably stays in the feet, yeah?
For the most part, yes. I do think this fight is going to take place on the feet. So, like I said, the strength of Devontae might really be a big key in this one, because if they do come into a clinch, I think it's going to be advantage Devontae. I think he's going to be able to move Ludovic around as much as he wants. Although Ludovic is very explosive, I do think he'll win some of the grappling exchanges at times. But overall, I think the advantage will be grappling-wise for Devontae. Now, on the feet, we know Devontae has really good boxing skills. We've seen him work combinations beautifully and get knockouts from them. But when somebody's throwing back at him, that's when he's really, really struggling. I mean, he was doing some good work against Jamie Mularkey. He was really pumping that jab out there, good effective striking, and then Mularkey kind of started pouring it on him, and we saw Devontae kind of fall into a shell, so...
you know, I don't like to see that. And I do think Ludovic Klein's going to be pushing forward towards Devontae. I think it's going to cause Devontae a lot of problems. But I do think the size advantage and the strength advantage with the boxing skills are going to be enough to get Devontae this one. I do think this one's not going over. Let me see if I can get the total rounds on this real quick. Because if it's around 2.5, I think you got to go with the under on that.
Agreed.
Oh, it's at 1.5. Ooh, yeah, I'd probably stay away from that then. If it's 1.5, I'd probably go over, but I'm going to stay away from it. The pick, though, I'm going with Devontae here. I think the boxing skills will shine. I'm going with Devontae.
You already know.
A&A MMA agreeing on this one. We're both going with the -150 favorite, Devontae Smith, to defeat the +130, Ludovic Klein. The first agreement from A&A MMA on the night.
Moving on to the featherweight division, we have Tim Elliott taking on Tagir Ulanbekov.
We'll start with... Did you say featherweight?
No, flyweight. Oh, did I say featherweight?
I don't know.
Whatever. Maybe. It's at 125. Ulanbekov is 13-1, only 30 years old, 5'7" with a 70-inch reach. He is on a 5-fight winning streak right now. Two of those by choke. One just says choke. I don't know what that is. One by guillotine choke. And then three decisions. He is 2-0 in the UFC thus far. Tim Elliott, though, the longtime vet, 35 years old, 5'7", the 67-inch reach. So he will have a 3-inch reach disadvantage in this fight. 17-12 with one draw is the record. He is coming off a loss to Matthias Nicolau in his last fight, but he did beat Jordan Espinoza and Ryan Benoit before that in 2021 and 2020. I mean, we've seen Tim Elliott fight everywhere, everyone, all eras of the UFC. His first UFC fight was in 2012. Like, this is experience against young guy. I don't know what to call him.
I mean, a Khabib protege, man. Tagir, just a fantastic grappler. When he gets you on the ground, he's going to use his ground and pound. He's going to be looking for submissions, but he has great top control. And he uses it so well. And I think that might pose some problems for Tim Elliott, but I think we're going to see a lot of scrambles in this fight. Because Tim Elliott is good when he gets on the ground. If he is on his back, he's either going to be hunting submissions or he does do a good job of creating space to get back up if he, you know, feels that's what's necessary. And I do think that's something he'll need to do in this fight, because I think Tim Elliott's, like, weird striking style that he brings will pose some problems for Ulanbekov. It might take him – I think it'll take him over a round to kind of get a little bit of a feel for Tim Elliott's striking style. But once he does, I feel like that's when it's going to start being in favor of Tagir Ulanbekov. I'm not letting Tim Elliott's, you know, former or like being a former title challenger and having so much experience scare me away here. I'm pretty confident in Tagir Ulanbekov. I think he's the pick for sure.
Yeah, I know I made a joke off the podcast last week about, like, I'm not picking any Russians, but let's not be crazy, you know. Tagir's the pick.
A&A MMA agreeing on this one. We're both going with the -240 favorite, Tagir Ulanbekov, to defeat the +195. I can't talk today, Tim Elliott.
Nice.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to the bantamweight division and another Khabib protege.
So I thought I saw this was going to be a featherweight.
So I have this at, I have one at bantamweight and one at featherweight, so you might be right on featherweight, Slim. We'll go with that.
Which is going to be interesting, because I think both guys, no, Brian Keller just fought at featherweight, Umar did not. So, Umar Nurmagomedov here, 13-0, 26 years old, 5'8" with a 69-inch reach. Coming off his first UFC win over Sergey Morozov with a second-round rear naked choke. He had one fight in the PFL. Most of his fights were in Fight Night Global. Lots of good finishes on his record. Peruvian necktie in his very first pro fight. Brian Kelleher, though, 24-12, 35 years old, 5'6" with a 64-inch reach. So he will have a 5-inch reach disadvantage and a 2-inch height disadvantage in this. That's going to be pretty big, whatever weight you're at. But Kelleher is coming off of two decent wins, one against Kevin Kroom and one against Domingo Polarte, where he was at bantamweight for that one. So he's pretty much going back and forth every other fight at this point. But yeah, man, this is going to be interesting. If Kelleher can, we know he has a great guillotine. I think that's going to be a really big key in this fight to where can Umar safely get the takedown. But we know he's got some hands as well.
His kicks, man. I think Umar is more Zabit than Khabib.
Yeah,
he's got that kick first striking style. He really works his kicks to the body well. He's got that beautiful, like, Israel Adesanya esque question mark kick. So, you know, I just don't know really where he can be beaten this one. I feel like Kelleher, you know, he's got the pop in his hands. Of course, he's got that beautiful left hook. If he throws one of those out there and does connect, I mean, he can definitely put Nurmagomedov out. But I just think the overall game of Umar, especially with his striking, is just going to give Kelleher so many fits. I could see Kelleher maybe sinking in one of his patented guillotine chokes, maybe getting a tap that way. But other than that, yeah, I think this one's going to be all Umar.
Agreed.
ANA MMA agreeing on this one. We're both going with the biggest favorite on the card, the -675 favorite, Umar.
Whoa.
To defeat the +475 Brian Kelleher.
That's a bit much.
Yeah, it is a little bit high.
Jeez. I agree. All right. I'd throw some money on a Brian Kelleher submission. What's that sitting at?
If you wanted Brian Kelleher by submission, give me 1 second. Oh, of course it's not fucking loading up, man.
I can pull it up.
No, I got you. 1 second. I'll just do it on my phone.
All right. Well, while you find that, I will go into this next fight. We have
Brian Kelleher by submission +1600, 16-1 odds.
Wow. Yeah, why not? Throw $5 on that. We have Marina Moros taking on Maria Agapova. This should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think this is, like, definitely one of the most underrated matchups of the night, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry. So anyway, starting with Moros here, the Iron Lady is 10-3, 30 years old. 5'7" with a 67-inch reach, fighting out of Ukraine.
I don't know what all that rolling was about, but okay.
I don't know. I thought I could tie it in there, but it didn't work. She's coming off two wins right now. Marina Bueno Silva. And Sabina Mato. And then she lost to Angie Hill and Carla Esparza before that. Looking at the Demon Slayer, Maria Agapova here, 10-2, 24 years old, fighting out of Kazakhstan, the 5'6" and with a 68-inch reach. She will have the reach advantage by an inch and height disadvantage by 1 inch. She's gone off a win over Sabina Mazo herself. She actually choked her out in the third round, whereas Moros got a decision. Then that, you know, we all know that Shayna Dobson loss, one of the biggest upsets in UFC history. It's gonna be an interesting one.
So I'm really interested to see kind of what Agapova's game plan is coming in, because I think Marina Moros just poses so many problems for her as a striker. We've seen Agapova uses her range really well. She's got a nice jab, but Moros kind of does the same stuff on the feet. So it'll be interesting to see if Agapova does start getting hit, if she's going to resort to her grappling, where I do think that's where she's going to have a little bit more of an advantage on Moros, or that could be her game plan right away, where she'll come out and start going for the grappling. Hopefully that, But I don't know, man. I just think Moro's striking will pose so many problems for Agapova. It's definitely something that you need to watch out for and makes Moro's a very live underdog. But I think Agapova can do enough on the feet to stay safe and maybe pull away on strike count because she is pretty active with her striking. And if it goes to the ground, I think that's where she'll do some of her better work. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Maria Agapova here.
Same.
A&A MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with the minus 190 Maria Agapova to defeat the plus 160 Marina Moroz. All right, we got three more prelims for you guys here. This one's taking place in the light heavyweight division we have.
Nick Negamariano taking on Kennedy and Shichekwu.
This is also a very underrated fight.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Nick is 11-1, 27 years old, 6'12", with a 68-inch reach. He's coming off wins over Ike Villanueva. Finished in the first round and a win over Alexa Kamer. He did lose his first fight to Serebek Saparov by decision. Kennedy Njekwu, 9-2, 29 years old, 6'5", with an 83-inch reach. The reach is huge, 6 inches. Or no, 5 inches. 5 inches of height as well. Kennedy's coming off that loss to Dawun Jung. First round knockout, I mean, we didn't really see that one coming. That was a pretty wild one. But he did have 3 wins before that. Daniil Marquez, Carlos Ulberg, and Darko Stojcic. 2 of those by finish.
Slim, look at this dude.
Oh!
Mans is trying to get a fish.
Is he dipping a paw in?
Mans is trying to get a fish. Get back, you little piece of shit. This cat's trying to catch a fish.
He want the real thing. He's only had the canned stuff.
All right, so as for this bout, I think this one's pretty cut and dry with the game plans of both men. I think Kennedy, the way we've seen him hit, just his power, man, like even when he was going against a fellow striker in Carlos Ulberg and he was getting tagged up a bit, he was staying in there really strong, man. And like he proved to us that he's really got some potential with his striking and like that power that he has at 205 is it's just one of those game changing type traits for a fighter to have. On the other side, Negomoreno, I'd like to see more out of his striking. You know, I think he could use a little bit more with his feints, throw jabs more, you know, try to mix in combinations. He kind of gets a little bit stagnant and does throw punches, you know, in single, like just throw single punches at times. So I'd like to see him be a little bit more active with the striking while he is there. But when it does come to the wrestling, man, that's where he'll have a big advantage. I think he'll be able to get this fight to the ground when he's, I don't think his first one or two takedowns will be successful, but if he does start chaining those takedowns together, that's when it'll start working for him, and I think he might be able to get Zichekwood to the ground. If he does pull that off, that's where his advantage is going to be, and I think he'll be able to ride out top control pretty much for the most part and end up getting a unanimous decision. But the more this one's standing, the more it's in favor of Kennedy and Zichekwood. It worries me. But I'm going with the underdog here. I'm going with Nikolai Negomoreno.
Same.
You're annoying, honestly.
No, I was. I wanted that.
No, you weren't.
Yeah.
You're annoying.
I wanted it.
You're bothering me. A&A MMA going with the plus 115 underdog Nikolai Negomoreno to defeat the minus 135 Kennedy and Zichekwu.
No, it sounds harsh, but I think Kennedy's still green.
Yeah, definitely. I can wholeheartedly agree with that statement there, Slimmy. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our next bout in the women's strawweight division. This is another fight that I feel like is just really flying under the radar on this fight card. I mean, that main card's pretty good, but this one could have been there and I wouldn't have batted an eye. That's how good this one is. A possible title eliminator and a battle between two of the top ranked women's strawweights in the world.
Yeah, well, it should have been on the main card. It's Marina Rodriguez
Who's ranked number three right now? Number nine, pound for pound.
Taking on Yan Xiaonan,
who is ranked number 10 overall and 11 in pound for pound. Or, I'm sorry, 10 in... I'm sorry. What is this? Why would they put that? All right, she's number four in strawweight, number 11 pound for pound. There we go. All
right. We'll start with Yan here. She's 13-2, 32 years old, 5'5" with 63-inch reach, coming off a loss to Carla Esparza, but she was on a 6-fight winning streak before that. All unanimous decisions. Marina Rodriguez, 15-1-2, 34 years old, 5'6" with 65-inch reach. She is on a 3-fight winning streak right now, and her last loss was to Carla Esparza. So, could it be a title eliminator? Yeah, probably. After Carla gets her shot, because, you know, she took out both these guys, ladies. Yeah, I mean, Marina has a way better finish rate than Yan Xiaonan. I think Yan's only got 1, 2, 3 finishes. Marina's got 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be a really technical striking battle, but I think Marina will have the edge in this one.
So Marina definitely going to have the power. We've seen her put combinations together, and her straight punches do her. She really puts a lot of power behind her straight punches, which is very impressive for somebody in this division. And then Yan Xiaonan, a lot of activity. She's kind of like Weili Zhang light, you know what I'm saying? Not to be disrespectful in any way, but... you know, she has that skill set, maybe not as much power at the end of her shots as Weili, but she definitely has that type of activity and speed on her strikes. And you know, she does have a really good overall skill set. She can mix in the wrestling. She can go strike for strike with most fighters in this division. But man, what did we just see from Marina Rodriguez? I took Rodriguez, you took Dern, but we just saw her beat somebody who we thought was, you know, flying towards a title shot in Mackenzie Dern. And it was an absolutely outstanding performance from Marina Rodriguez. I mean, the more and more I watch her, the more impressive she is to me, man. I really think she's the one to beat in this fight. It's kind of her fight to lose here. She's, I don't know, man. She's just, I think, bound for a title shot. And I don't think Yan Xiaonan's really going to have enough versatility in her striking, and I don't think she's going to be able to get Rodriguez on the ground enough to take this one. So I got to go with Marina Rodriguez here.
Same.
ANA MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with the -260 favorite Marina Rodriguez to defeat the +210 Yan Xiaonan.
All right, moving on to the lightweight division. We have Jalen the Tarantula Turner taking on Jamie Mullarkey.
This is someone's getting knocked out here, I feel like.
Yeah, it's a really good one. Mullarkey, 14-4, 27 years old, 6'12", with 74-inch reach. He is coming off that win over Devontae Smith, the second-round knockout, and a first-round knockout over Kama Worthy before that. Very, very impressive. He did have losses to Ferris Zayim and Brad Riddell before that. Jalen Turner, though, 11-5 overall, 26 years old, 6'3" with a 75.5-inch reach. He would be a great fight against Bahamondes, too.
That'd be a fun one.
Yeah, two of the tallest fighters. He's on a 3-fight winning streak right now. Uros Medic, first-round rear naked choke. Brock Weaver, second-round rear naked choke. Joshua Kulbao, second-round grounded pound. I remember when he first came in to the UFC, we were a little unsure about him because he's just a little bit long and tall and didn't know how to use it yet, but he's really starting to put that together.
Definitely. Yeah, man. Like you said, this is just going to be like such a good matchup because Jamie Mullarkey, I feel like he's one of those guys we always kind of count him out, but he always goes out there and proves us wrong, dude. Like, yeah. His striking really is next level. He trains at City Kickboxing with some of the best. And, you know, I think Jamie Mullarkey, at this point, we need to always consider him a live underdog, and I'm just done at this point betting against Jamie Mullarkey. But again, man, like you said, I think Jalen Turner's really coming into his own. That last win over Uros Medic, like, that was kind of all I needed to see to know that, like, Jalen Turner is back, and Jalen Turner might be making a run towards the top 15. So, you know, if he pulls this off and maybe gets one more win, he might be right there in the top 15, man. So I think Jalen Turner has a lot on the line in this one, and he's my pick here.
Same.
A&A MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going minus 155 Jalen Turner over the plus 135 Jamie Mularkey. I'm also going Jalen Turner by submission.
Nice. All right, moving on to the main card. We have the token heavyweight fight of the card.
As always.
Happens to be on the main card, too. It's Sergey Spivak taking on Greg Hardy. We'll start with the polar bear. He's 13-3. Why is it giving me Ohio State updates? I don't give a fuck. Spivak, 13-3, 27 years old, 6'3" with a 78-inch reach. He's coming off that loss to Tom Aspinall in the first round, but he was on a three-fight winning streak. Carlos Felipe, Jared Vandera, and Alexei Oleinik. I believe he was just recently ranked. I believe he was right at the top 15, if not right outside it. Greg Hardy, 7-4, 33 years old, 6'5" with an 80.5-inch reach. The reach advantage is going to be 2.5 inches and 2 inches in height for him as well. Coming off two losses, the Tai Tuivasa and Marcin Tybura, when he got knocked out in each one of those. Is this man starting to get chinny? I hope not.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible, but, you know, I don't think Sergey Spivak's going to be the one to test his chin, so I don't think... I don't think he really has too much to worry about on that front. Yeah, I mean, we got an absolutely fantastic grappler here in Sergey Spivak, where if he does get this fight to the ground, it's going to be over pretty quick. I think he's going to get a submission. Whereas Greg Hardy, if he is able to fend off takedowns and keep his standing, we've seen what's happened when Sergey Spivak fights guys that have big power advantages, a la Walt Harris. So I think if this one does stay standing, it's going to look a lot like that fight with, you know, Sergey Spivak ended up on his back. But if he does have a good game plan, if he's able to, and that's a big thing too. I feel like Greg Hardy kind of needs to like be old Greg Hardy in this one and have like zero patience, like come out winging him.
Yeah.
Trying to get like a sub 30-second knockout. That's what Greg Hardy's game plan needs to be, because I feel like the more that Sergey Spivak's trying to get this fight to the ground, the more that Greg Hardy's not going to be able to stop those takedowns. And, yeah, man, it always worries me. Like, obviously, I would never bet on this fight because, like, Greg Hardy's got that knockout power, and we've seen Sergey Spivak be knocked out before. But I think the grappling advantage is going to be too much. I think Sergey Spivak's really shown us a lot. Remember, he beat Tai Tuivasa. Greg Hardy was knocked out by him. So, simple MMA math there, right? Pick Sergey Spivak for me. I want you to think about this before you make your pick, too. I don't know if anybody's ever fucked you worse than Greg Hardy. Like,
how?
I'm pretty sure you've picked all four of his losses. So, or at least three of them.
Well, the illegal knee was bullshit. I don't think I picked him against Volkov, did I?
No, you didn't.
Yeah, so I probably lost against Tybura and Tuivasa, yeah. Spivak lost by... Fuck it, I'm going Greg Hardy.
A&A MMA disagreeing on this one. I'm going with the minus 195 favorite, Sergey Spivak. So I'm going with the plus 165 underdog, Greg Hardy.
Gotta pick that knockout power, man.
Whatever. Let's go ahead and move on to 170. This is a fight I think everybody is excited for.
Yeah, it's Kevin Holland's welterweight debut. He's taking on Cowboy Alex Oliveira, who is 22-11-1, 34 years old, 5'11" with 76.5-inch reach. He's coming off three losses, though. Combine coverage. Oh, Rams might pick up Odell again. Yeah, he got knocked out or choked out by Savkat Rachmanov. He got Choked out by Randy Brown with that one arm rear naked choke, and he got decision by Nico Price on a bit of a downfall lately. Kevin Holland, though, not looked so good himself. He got decisioned against Brunson, decisioned against Vettori, and then the no contest loss against Dacus, which, you know, he, if they didn't call it no contest, he lost, because he got choked out on that too. I think middleweight or welterweight is going to be big for him. I think this is going to be a great debut for him.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Kevin Holland's, like, his natural frame has always kind of been more for 170, in my opinion. And I just really think we're going to see him flourish there. I mean, we saw him kind of fighting up a weight class at all times, where he was always kind of like the skinnier guy against these 185ers. Coming in here at 170, man, I feel like he's going to be looking good. Of course, you know, Cowboy, as entertaining as he always is, his fights just haven't been the best lately. His performances haven't been the best lately, and it's just so tough for me to pick him. I think the lock of the night has to be Kevin Holland.
Yeah, for sure.
A&A MMA agreeing on this one. We're both going with the minus 350 favorite, Kevin Holland, to defeat the plus 270, Alex Oliveira.
All right, moving on, we have Edson Barboza taking on Bryce Mitchell. The man got the camo shorts.
And they're nice, I'm not going to lie.
But we also got to find out how much of a right-wing, ignorant Republican who soaks up anti-vaccine nonsense and thinks the government is trying to take his guns.
Shout out to all of our Republican listeners, you know what I'm saying?
Sure. But it's Thug Nasty nonetheless. I do love him, even though his political views are fucked up. Thug Nasty is 14-0, undefeated at 27 years old, 5'10" with a 70-inch reach. He's on a 5-fight winning streak right now in the UFC. I mean, he's looked absolutely fantastic. Got a twister in there, you know, twister submission. Come on now, who does that? Edson Barboza, though, 22-10, 36 years old, 5'11", with a 75-inch reach. So Mitchell will have a 5-inch reach disadvantage and 1-inch in height. I think Barboza, when he fought Chikadze in his last fight, when he was getting backed up that entire fight, and I don't think he was able to get his kicks off like he wanted to, like he was able to do with Shane Burgos and Makwan Amirkhani. I think Bryce Mitchell really needs to have super duper pressure in this fight, like you mentioned, with
absolutely
with old Esichuk, or else, you know, he won't be able to get it done. But Bryce, I mean, cannot stand with Barboza. Like, he cannot hang out there. He has got to go take down all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth, Slim. I think Bryce Mitchell's got to have a solid game plan coming in here. While he's not the worst striker by any means, he does have some striking skills. He just has such a different level on the ground. And the thing is, once he does get the fight to the ground, he's got to hold Barboza down there, because Barboza, we know he's so explosive and strong. I mean, it's going to be tough for him to, like, hold him down there, man. I feel like the more and more, like, slippery these guys get, and Barboza, you know, might start to wear on him. Remember, Barboza will be the bigger guy in this fight. I think this fight's tricky, man. I feel like this is one of the hardest fights of the night to call. And I got to be honest with you, Slim. I like the live underdog here, given Bryce Mitchell his first loss. I got to go with Edson Barboza, dude.
You know what? They can't take his guns, and they can't take his O away from him either. I'm going Bryce Mitchell.
A&A MMA disagreeing here. I'm going with the underdog, the plus 150, Edson Barboza. Slim going with the minus 170 favorite, Bryce Mitchell. All right, time for the 5-round co-main event. I don't know why it's still 5 rounds, but, like, whatever.
Cool. Was it 5 rounds to begin with?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
All right. It's Rafael Dos Anjos taking on Renato Moicano, who we just saw. What is that? 2 weeks ago,
yes, Alexander Hernandez.
Yeah, got that fabulous choke in the second round. He just bullied.
You picked Alexander Hernandez.
Yeah, parlay buster there. Where he just bullied Hernandez. I mean, he looked excellent on the feet. He's really starting to put it all together here. And he looked good in his last fight too against Jai Herbert. I mean, he's ran into like Rafael Fiziev, but that was it. That was his only loss since he moved back up to lightweight here, so he's looked really good. Dos Anjos, though. Oh, also, this fight is at 160, so 2 weeks in a row we have a fight at 160. Dos Anjos, though, 30-13, 37 years old, 5'8" with a 70-inch reach. As we know, was supposed to fight Makhachev initially in October last year, then was supposed to fight Fiziev twice, once in February and then now in March, so that's gone. He and Steps Moicano here. So Rafael, we have not seen him since November of 2020 when he fought Paul Felder on short notice to a split decision.
Yep.
This is gonna be a rough one. So he ain't getting any younger here. 2 years after that, and I thought, you know, I didn't think Felder won that fight by any means, but I thought, you know, a 10-day notice Felder would be a way easier matchup for him. But yeah, this is only his second fight since dropping down back down to lightweight since 2020. So interesting to see.
Yeah, and that's definitely something you got to put in consideration, Slim. The ring rust of Rafael Dos Anjos. Like you said, we haven't seen him in a while. But Moicano, man, you know what really does worry me about him? Like, if you even just think about 2 weeks ago when he fought Hernandez, he was tired, dude, in that fight. Like,
you think?
First round, he was tired. And now we have him going 5 rounds. Like, I know Rafael Dos Anjos is getting up there in age. He's 37 years old. Second most ring time or octagon time in UFC history.
Yeah, but cardio's never bothered him.
He's fought so many 5-round fights. The further this fight goes, the more and more and more it's going to shift in the favor of Rafael Dos Anjos. And I just think his striking is going to be a lot for Moicano. Not that Moicano is an incompetent striker or anything like that. He does have a nice jab. He uses his length to his advantage. But Dos Anjos, I mean, we've seen he's got such a well-rounded package. I mean, we're talking about a former lightweight champion here, a guy that's always had knockout power and who does have good grappling himself. We know that grappling is the bread and butter of Moicano, but you're going to have offensive wrestling if you want to get Dos Anjos to the ground. And Moicano is not one of those guys I feel like is going to like get in the clinch and, you know, use a body throw or anything like that, or even use open cage wrestling tactics. I don't know, man. I just don't really know where Renato Moicano is going to be able to win this fight. So I just got to go with RDA in this one, despite not seeing him for a while, despite, you know, him getting up there in age. I'm pretty confident here. I think this one's RDA.
Yeah, I got to do that just for experience alone. Like you said, he's been in those 5-round wars. Moicano never has. So
A&A MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with the -180 favorite, Rafael Dos Anjos, to defeat the +155 Renato Moicano.
All right. On to the main event. Fuck the stats. You know what it is. It's Colby Masvidal. Two brothers. Used to live together. Blah, blah, blah. You've heard it all. Can Jorge stop the takedown of Colby? And can Colby not get knocked out by Masvidal? That's all it is.
It is as simple as that, but we got to remember, man, these guys, there's the bad blood factor, and we've seen in the bad blood fights, Masvidal typically does pretty well, and we've seen Colby, I mean, kind of just an unmatched pace, unless your name's Kamaru Usman, so, yeah, man, it's going to be fun no matter what, I can guarantee you that, but, you know, if Colby's not able to get this fight to the ground, he does have the good striking, but I think Masvidal, you know, if he's not worried too much about the takedowns at any point in this fight and he's really letting those hands go, he's obviously got the better boxing skills than Colby. Colby while not the most refined striker, though, does have a very, very hard pace and output to match. So, dude, I don't know, man. This one's really fun, and I wish we didn't have to pick it so we could just chill and watch, but I'm going Colby here.
What? Yeah, I mean, same. But what are the odds on a Masvidal knockout?
Jorge by knockout. Currently sitting at plus 400.
Hey, I put $5 on that too.
Yeah, not bad.
Five on that and five on, what was the other one? The submission one? Brian Keller.
Yeah. Some little tricky picks there from your boy Slim.
Sure.
But yeah, man. A&A MMA both going with Colby here. I think the pace is going to be too much. The takedowns are going to be a lot. And we've seen a real evolution in Colby Covington. So I think he's the pick here. Definitely rooting for Jorge, though.
Same.
So as for the pick, A&A MMA going with the minus 335 favorite Colby Covington to defeat the plus 260 Jorge Masvidal. All right, which takes us to one of my favorite times of the day where I win you guys some money, 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 money. And I've been hot lately. I mean, I've only lost on a couple little parlays for you guys so far this year. I think one. So let's get this money this week, boys. We're starting our parlay here with Tagir Ulanbekov Moneyline at minus 240. I think that's a perfect place for us to start. We're going to follow that up with Jalen Turner at minus 155. I like how close those odds are. I think he's going to get it done versus Malarkey. We follow that up. Kind of high odds here, but if we're putting it on a parlay, it'll help. At minus 350, we're going with Kevin Holland. And then we're going to get tricky here, guys. Usually I only give you, maybe a three-leg, four-leg parlay if I'm getting risky. We're going five-leg this week, y'all. We're winning some cash money. We're adding Rafael Dos Anjos. He's going to get it done versus Moicano and Colby Covington. With those picks, we get a plus 505 five-pick parlay. If you put one unit on it, that'll bring you back a plus 5 units. So with your unit, you get 6 units back. I think we're cashing out on that parlay. I'm loving it. So Tagir Ulanbekov money line, Jalen Turner money line, Kevin Holland money line, Rafael Dos Anjos money line, and Colby Covington money line. Let's go. Monty's bulletproof parlay of the day.
I like it.
So yeah, that's kind of all we got for you guys. Just real quick, in case anybody did maybe miss a pick on the or something like that, I'm going to run down real quick. In the light heavyweight division, both of us going with Dustin Jacoby.
No.
Oh, a disagreement. I'm going with Dustin Jacoby. Slim's going with Michael Oleksychuk. In the lightweight division, both of us going with Devontae Smith to defeat Ludo Klein. In the flyweight division, both of us going with Tagir Ulanbekov to defeat Tim Elliott. In the bantamweight division, or it is at featherweight, confirmed, right?
No.
Whatever. Featherweight division, both of us going with Umar Nurmagomedov to defeat Brian Kelleher. In the women's flyweight division, both of us going with Maria Agapova to defeat Marina Moroz. In the light heavyweight division, both of us going with Nick Negu Moreno to defeat Kennedy and Zichekwu. In the women's strawweight division, both of us going with Marina Rodriguez to defeat Yan Xiaonan. In the lightweight division and the featured prelim bout, both of us going with Jalen Turner to defeat Jamie Malarkey. On the main card and in the heavyweight division, I'm going with Sergey Spivak. Slim going with Greg Hardy. In the welterweight division, both of us going with Kevin Holland to defeat Alex Oliveira. In the featherweight division, I'm going with Edson Barboza. Slim going with Bryce Mitchell Barboza. At a catchweight of 160 pounds, both of us going with Rafael Dos Anjos to defeat Renato Moicano. And then in the main event for the welterweight, nothing of the world, it's Colby Covington for us to defeat Jorge Masvidal. That is your official rundown for UFC 272. Good luck hunting, my friends. I hope you guys win a little cash off that parlay, and I hope just everything is prosperous for everyone, all listeners. Prosperity to you.
Absolutely.
Big shout out to my cat Spyro. You only meowed like 50 times during this podcast, so we're working on it. Going well, dude.
Pretty good, yeah, I'd say.
Not too bad.
Maybe you can get a fish.
No, he's not getting any of the fish.
He's got something to say about it.
Yeah, he's like, what? He's like, wait till you're sleeping. I'm about to eat six of them. If I find any guppy carcasses on the floor, I'm going to be pissed.
You won't. You'll find them in his turds.
Well, guppy bones, I'll be pissed.
All right. We out of here.
We will talk to you guys next week where we'll let you know how this thing went. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, y'all. Take it easy. Yeah. Peace.
Peace.